You're listening to Charlottesville's Podcasting Network with your host, Dan Gould. Virginia History with Rick Britton starts right now.
Rick Britton is a local award-winning author, cartographer, and historian. You can find him online at rickbritton.com. He joins me in studio for our continuing series on Virginia's colorful 18th and 19th century history. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing this morning?
I am very well, thank you. I thought we'd spend a couple of minutes to get started here to talk about some of the things we're going to do in the upcoming shows in this series.
Yeah, you know, we've got some really great ideas we're going to try out and see how the listeners like them. We've got this ongoing series talking about different aspects of the Civil War. I think in the last episode we were talking about marching and fighting shoulder to shoulder, kind of different things. But we're also going to spice up this series by doing all kinds of different things. For example, live remotes where we go out to historic sites and talk to people there. We might do some interviews with some historians in this area, Central Virginia, in and around Charlottesville, people who are working on books. And they can talk to us about the books they have coming out. There's all kinds of different things that we can do.
Yeah, we want to keep our listeners wondering what we're going to be up to.
That's
next.
Right. And keep them coming back.
And keep them coming back.
Keep them coming back.
All right. So what have you brought to share with us today?
Well, you know, in our last episode, we were talking about marching and we're talking about the guys getting really tired. But then, of course, there's another aspect of marching, and that is that woe be to any passerby, especially a cavalryman, infantryman, love to make fun of cavalrymen. So woe be it to any cavalryman, especially a guy by himself who would happen to ride by. Say, for example, and this was a really, really common incident in the Civil War. There's a marching column of infantry. It's dusty. It's dirty. They're hot and bothered and tired. And here comes a cavalryman, and his forage cap, his slouch hat, rather, might be a little bit too big, according to some of the wags in the ranks. So you'd be hearing something up and down the column as he rode by. Come out of that there hat. I see your legs a-dangling. Maybe his uniform, maybe his boots would be a little bit too big. Come out of them there boots. I see your arms a-flapping. And this would go up and down. And, of course, the infantrymen would be roaring with laughter. Perhaps there'd be a staff officer riding by. And he has just purchased himself a brand new uniform. And, of course, the men in the ranks, they're not wearing anything that's brand new at all. It's old, it's dusty, it's dirty, it's ragged. Here comes a guy with what they think might be too much braid on his sleeves or too many insignia on his collar. You know, come out from inside of all that braid. I see your legs a-dangling. Lots of times they'd be riding by and you'd hear, Mister, here's your mule. And it's funny, some of the generals were just as fond of making jokes on the march. And one of those was Jeb Stuart, who was always fond of having a lot of fun. You know, he had his fiddler with him, Joe Sweeney. His banjo picker, Joe Sweeney, with him. But the colonel for the longest time of the 19th Virginia Infantry was a guy by the name of Strange. And we don't use this phrase nowadays at all, but passing strange was a phrase back then that meant beyond the ridiculous, beyond the weird. Well, that is just passing strange. And every time Jeb Stuart and his staff, of course, he's got to show off and make his staff laugh. Every time they would ride by the 19th Virginia Infantry, he would turn to them and go, look, boys, we're passing strange. Because, of course, he's riding past Colonel Strange, and there'd be howls of laughter from the staff, and then the infantrymen would try to get him back. There's a really famous incident from the Gettysburg campaign, and the Confederate soldiers are up in Union territory and they're marching past a settlement, and here comes a rather large buxom woman, and she's leaning across her fence at the infantryman and the Confederate infantryman, and she has pinned a United States flag, Old Glory, over her very ample bosom. And of course, the last thing you want to do is present yourself in front of a group of young men. Of course, they're all trying to make each other laugh. And one of the men from the 19th Virginia supposedly stepped out of the ranks, took off his hat, gave her a very courtly bow, and said, "Excuse me, ma'am, but these boys are used to charging breastworks where they see that flag a flying."
All right, I have a question though.
Okay,
what is a slouch hat?
A slouch hat is one of those wide-brimmed hats. I started off by saying a forage cap. A forage cap is another name for a kepi, because it's actually a way to. It started off in the French army, and if you flip the thing over, it kind of opens up into a little bag. So it was actually a forage cap to forage stuff for your horse. So a forage cap is another name for a kepi, that hat that kind of sits on top of the head with a round circle. That's really the bottom of the forage cap that sits on top of your head with a little brim in front of you. But the slouch hat is a wide brimmed hat, and the guys would wear it, you know, every way imaginable, with the front pinned up, the right side pinned up, the left side pinned up, turned into a tricorn hat with three sides pinned up.
It's being cool in the Civil War, right?
Trying to get
a little identity out of that uniform that everybody's wearing.
Absolutely right. Yeah. And you know, back then we don't know this anymore. Us guys don't know this, but back then in the 19th century, the hat was something that you used to identify yourself with. So all the guys in the army, they're getting handed the same hat. They have to personalize it some way. So they're either going to stick a feather in it, they're going to pin up one side, they're going to put a piece of laurel in it, they're going to put a star on the front of it, they're going to put some kind of insignia on it, they're going to put a cord around it.
Now, this must have been against some kind of dress code regulation, surely.
Well, there were dress codes, but I mean, it's kind of hard when, you know, when the guys don't get uniforms all that often, it's kind of hard to make them toe the line on something as strict as a dress code. We were talking about boys making fun on the march, but of course, lots of times they're really hungry on the march. And so it was real common for them to break away from the column of march and rush out to get some food. And sometimes the approach of an army was almost like a plague of locusts on any neighborhood, because these guys are sometimes near starvation. It was real common if they were passing a well for guys to break ranks and rush the well until they had drunk the well dry. You can see that bucket going down and coming back up and going down and coming back up. Sometimes they'd take a whole bunch of canteens and take the corks out, of course, put all of them on the end of a stick, and then lower all of them down into the well. So you can load up 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 canteens, depending on the side of the well, simultaneously. And then, of course, if you're passing by a farm, anything that the farmer has while the officers are looking the other way are fair game. So the chickens, the eggs, the milk, the hogs, the pigs, sometimes the beef.
And did the officers look the other way?
Yeah, if they know, by and large, if they know that their guys are hungry, and of course they're hungry too, what are you going to say? You know, lots of times an officer on the march would come upon some of his guys and they had shot a pig, and the man could claim that he had shot the pig in self-defense. Well, this pig attacked me. I just had to, it was a vicious pig. I just had to shoot him. And so, you know, the officer would snicker, turn the other way. But then, of course, to pay the officer back, they might bring him a little bit of the pork later on when they're around the campfire.
Right.
These kinds of things happened all the time. Right. They're regulations. They're not supposed to be taking food. They're not supposed to be begging at all the farmhouses. They're not supposed to be stealing from the farmers. But, of course, this happened everywhere. Everywhere there was a large group of men.
And just as a quick aside, why were the men always hungry? Why there's not the kind of sophistication of supply that we have in modern warfare? What caused that?
Well, there were, and in the Federal Army, by and large, they were better fed. And let's talk about rations a little bit. By and large, they were better fed, but even in the Federal Army, these things kind of broke down. Now, here's a list of the items that were normally issued in the Federal Army of the Potomac. Salt pork, fresh beef, beef on the hoof. So they're marching cattle along with them to slaughter when they get into camp. Salt beef, sometimes ham or bacon, hard bread, soft bread. The men loved it when they were in a camp long enough for the Army to set up a bakery so they could actually bake and issue soft bread. Now, we're talking about the Northern Army now. Potatoes, flour, beans, rice, dried apples, dried peaches, desiccated vegetables. Desiccated vegetables are dried vegetables that you dump into boiling water, and presto chango, you've got stew or some kind of soup. Now, the men took that word desiccated and turned it into desecrated. So they didn't like these vegetables sometimes, so they were so dried and they didn't plump up into anything, so they became desecrated vegetables. Coffee, of course, really important. Tea, sugar, molasses, vinegar, pepper, salt, soap, and candles. Now, these things were supposed to be issued on a regular basis. Out on campaign, lots of times what they're doing north and south, they're carrying 3 days' rations in their haversack. In the Confederate Army, it was really common for the men to be issued what was supposed to be eaten over 3 days, a little bit of pork, a little bit of beef, maybe some hardtack, maybe a little bit of rice to kind of plump up that soup or that stew that you're going to make, and the men to make it, to cook it, and eat it right away, because what they were being issued for 3 days, in normal life, they would have easily eaten at one meal. This was really, really common. Now, for the next 2 days, they're going to have to rely on their foragers from their company or their regiment to bring back food for everybody, because they've eaten everything that they're supposed to have for 3 days.
And so were there some marches that were just near starvation? I mean, men actually dying from starvation?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And men would fall out on the marches in the summertime and pass out and die from heat stroke. But remember, we're talking about, by and large, hale and hearty young fellows, 18, 19, 20, 20 to 25, the vast majority of the men in the ranks who have been used to living off the land as farmers. They know what to do. They know how to get food. They know how to hunt. And so a lot more, I think, a lot more hardier and a lot more self-sufficient than the average person nowadays. And of course, the object, we've been talking about marching and the kinds of things that go into a march, and let's talk a little bit about the destination. The destination at the end of a march is a camp. The first thing that would happen when you arrive at a camp is you have to lay it out. And believe it or not, there are drill manuals. It's in the drill book, how to lay out a camp. And each company in a regiment, 10 companies in a regiment, each company would lay out a company street. So the tents for the men in that company face each other on a street that's so many paces wide so they can march up and down. And at the head is the company commander in his tent facing down the company street. So you could see how by doing this, a regiment would set up what looks like a little town with regular streets, with all the officers in one line facing down the various company streets. Then the regimental commanders and the staff would be behind them. The sinks where the men are relieving themselves, that's at the other end of the camp. And then you have your color line, and you have a regular area where they set up a regular row where they put in their fires. So it's all very regulated. That's if all the supply wagons with all of this tentage has kept up with the Army. And oftentimes those don't keep up with the Army, of course. And so the men have to rely on what they're carrying on themselves. And so they've got a blanket in the Confederate Army, a blanket roll, and a gum blanket, perhaps, outside of that. So all they've got is a blanket and the gum blanket, and they're going to camp out underneath the stars.
So I'm picturing really a small city here, of men. And I'm wondering, you know, where did they get the space to do this? I mean, if it's private property, crown land, I mean, any place they want. I mean, are there rules of war when it comes to that sort of thing?
Well, there's supposed to be rules of war, but, you know, it's kind of hard to argue with a large body of well-armed men. So the answer is pretty much, it's you just asked me the same question as where does the grizzly bear sleep? And the answer is anywhere he damn well pleases. So if a farmer has a large field and it looks opportune for them, and there's a creek nearby, they're going to march out into his field. They're going to also eat all of his corn while they're there, and probably shoot his pigs.
I would imagine that the land would be pretty much ravaged by the time the
Absolutely.
Army moved on to the next place.
Yeah, and that's why I used that phrase like a biblical plague of locusts. There were regulations, and you can imagine. One of the first things that they want to do is they want to cook their meals. Those coffee addicts, they've got to have that coffee. So the campfires start almost right away, and you'd have somebody out of a mess. A mess is a group of eight men, and they're going to eat together. They're going to make their meals together. They're going to forage together. And usually you'd have somebody assigned, one of those guys, to cut the wood and to tend the fire, so you can keep that fire going all day long. And all evening long, you might be sleeping around that fire with your feet into it to keep it warm, with your feet facing into it. And the first thing that would happen is all the fences in the neighborhood would disappear, because it's the easiest way to get firewood.
Right.
And in this part of the country, the snake rail fences, some people call them Virginia snake rail fences, up in Maryland, they're called Maryland snake rail fences, are those fences. They run in a zigzag pattern, really, with the rails just laid up one on top of the other. And some of them would be really high. They're easy to disassemble because all you have to do is pick off the rails. And Stonewall Jackson was a very particular general officer. And seeing that his men on one campaign were continually stealing the rails and just burning up the fence rails, and the farmers would come to him and his staff and complain, in a fit of rage, he sent an order out to the men that they were only allowed to take the top rail. They were only allowed to take the top rail. So he wakes up in the morning after issuing this order, feeling good about himself that he's saved the fence rails in this neighborhood, and he looks out from his tent, and all of the fences are completely gone. Right nearby, there's a large roaring campfire with all these fence rails just burning. And so he buttons on his uniform and he storms over to that campfire, and there's a soldier right there, and he puts his hand on the soldier's shoulder and he says, "Didn't you get that order that you were only supposed to take the top rail?" And the soldier turns to General Jackson and says, "General, it was the top rail when I took it."
Is that a true story?
That's a true story.
I think that probably that's a good place to end. So you'll be back with us on in December 11th, and what are we going to talk about? You have plans for what we'll talk about then?
Yeah, we'll talk about the how they prepared their meals, some of the things that they ate, and how they cooked stuff. It's kind of interesting.
Great. Rick, it's been fun as always. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Join us each second and fourth Sunday for Virginia History with Rick Britton. For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Gould.